Blog Talk Radio.
This is the voice of Mocha 868, and you're listening to The Living Room, brought to you by El Nostro Reino Radio. Welcome to our kingdom.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. We are happy that you have joined us in the living room at El Nostro Reino Radio. We are a group that is located, we are a kingdom that is located on allpoetry.com, allpoetry.com, the world's largest poetry community. I want to thank Kevin for giving us a platform to come together and create what we create and gather who we gather together, because we have an awesome group of people that they can write some poetry, folks. Let me tell you what, and I am thoroughly impressed with all these people. They're brilliant. They're fantastic, and I absolutely love them and love everything they do. Where am I going from here? Today's topic is a wonderful topic. It's nature. We're just asking people to bring us to their place of nature. Tell us what it means to them. How does it make them feel? How do they experience nature? And what's kind of their favorite place? I'm going to be sharing several pictures I've been taking lately in and around where I live. And it is a very natural setting in a natural area. It's got a little bit of everything, but ultimately it's one of my main fishing spots. I love to go fishing, and I love to experience just being one with nature. And I'm very thankful to be where I'm at, because it is a wonderful, glorious place that really completes me. If I didn't have nature, I don't know what I would do, where I would be, because I grew up with nature. I grew up walking through the woods. Even though I grew up in a suburb of Minneapolis, Minnesota, we had our lake cabin in northern Minnesota, and I was a boy who just loved to get into things, the creepy, crawly, whatever things that I would go about, take a look at, play with, use for fishing, because I used to catch my own worms. I created a little device that would get them out of the ground easier, which is kind of crazy as a kid being able to do something like that. But it's all kind of a fun little thing that and journey that I have become. You know, I was an outdoorsman from BART. I started fishing when I was 5 years old, and still do it today and still enjoy it. It's not, like I said, it's one that could you survive if everything else went out away from you? And I think I could. But ultimately, it's much more than that, because it's a respect thing. It's something that you gather. When I used to live down in North Carolina, you had to respect where you were at, because sometimes when you're in those woods and you don't know where you are, you don't know the trails, you got to be able to always be respectful of your surroundings. Otherwise, you can get lost very easily. And when you get lost and just being a quarter mile off of a road, it's like you're 30 miles in the middle of nowhere, or 150 kilometers in the middle of a forest, not knowing which way to run, not knowing which way to go. So it's a very, very thing about respecting what's around you. But at the same time, it brings you a level of peace. It brings you a level of, where you're accepted. You're accepted as part of this world, because you're part of that nature. You're part of what goes on around you. And that's kind of what this show is about. We will have a couple callers coming in. Mocha is going to be coming in here very shortly. But ultimately, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start off with a little poem from Phil the Poet. And here we go.
Is a poem by Phil the Poet called Consider God's Wondrous Works. Consider God's wondrous works that are everywhere to behold, from the deepest part of the universe, the very nucleus of a cell. He has put his signature in everything he made to declare that it is his and his alone, the sun, the moon, and the stars in the skies. The rain, the snow, the hail, and the frost, all stored away for his use. He's a landscape artist who painted the green fields, the snow-capped mountains, the forests, the woods, and every creature in them, all sketched with such precise detail. He made the lion to prowl and the eagle to soar above the clouds. He gave strength to the horse and a voice of song to the nightingale. He made us in his own image and gave us wisdom on how to look after his creation, to see the beauty all around us. Consider God's wondrous works. There's just a glimpse of what is waiting beyond this mortal realm, a beauty unfathomable to the eyes of man. End poem.
Wow, that is stunning. I love this. This brought me all over the place. It brought me once again up to our lake cabin. I look at the sun, the moon, and the stars in the sky, the rain, the snow, the hail, and the frost. I remember moments at our lake cabin. Of course, the sun beating down, the moon high above. What was most amazing, I remember sitting on our fishing dock in the middle of night and looking up and seeing the stars, just billions and billions of stars up in that sky that just shine. See the satellites moving through the sky at a slow speed, and the blinks up there and the different colors. And it was so clear, so clear. And then he brings us over into the other landscapes, the green fields, the snow-capped mountains, the forest, the woods. Oh, you know, you just brings me around to the different places. Even when I was in the military in sergeant school, I was up in Joint Base Lewis McChord up in Washington State doing that class in the middle of a rainforest up there. And that was an experience too, because every single piece of this is just etched within who I am. Even when you talk about the lion's prowl, think about the great cats that you see in the world. I remember that there was an outdoor zoo in North Carolina that rescued some injured bald eagles. And I look at that, the eagles soar high above the clouds. You know, I have traveled along the Mississippi River Valley, and I've seen the eagles that are soaring high. They just capture attention. They capture your mind and your imagination and everything that goes with that. And I think that is there's kind of a breathlessness, a breathtaking feeling within that particular moment that just grabs a hold of you. You know, it just overwhelms you. And I love that about nature, about how everything works. There are times that you are just overtaken with what's around you. You kind of blend into that and become invisible. And That is just an amazing part of nature itself, is does to you and how it grabs a hold of you and everything like that. I think it's just absolutely stunning. Let me see if I got a good picture for that. You know, that first picture I put up is a place I call my backyard. It's I walk out the door and I can look straight into it. I think it's just fantastic. And I'm so lucky. Let me see. Ooh, hold on. That image. I'm getting there, folks. I'm gonna see what I can grab a hold of. I pressed the wrong button. Just something that soaring over the sky. Let's pick. Ooh, I'll pick this one. Yeah, there are some just gorgeous, gorgeous pictures. I got me my new phone and excited about that because the pictures are so clear. It's almost like they're not real. And I'm glad I'm able to kind of bring this view to everybody else that I live and where I live. It's just a stunning place. Absolutely fantastic. Let me see what I'm going to do next. Okay. I think I'm going to read a little bit of Dylan next. Let me get to the right spot. And I might pull a, who knows, I might pull a picture for each one of these. Oh, that's an image. The sky is so blue in these pictures. It's just phenomenal. Okay, this is called Spawn of Winter by Unholy Saint, a.k.a. Dylan. I'm drinking a little tea here, folks. Give my thanks. So Spawn of Winter and Sea by Unholy Saint. I was carried away in a tiny boat that I did not want. The ocean was calling, and I needed a different kind of air. I made the waves rock me, but not to sleep. Of course, the winter wind was howling for me, I'm going to start that over because I kind of messed up. I was carried away in a tiny boat that I did not want. The ocean was calling and I needed a different kind of air. I made the waves rock me, but not to sleep. Of course, the winter wind was howling for me to be still, but I couldn't hear it anymore as I plunged into the deep blue sea. The whirlpools are like an unruly father, always blood in the water and salt in the wound. When I get tired, I spend time above. The winter snow loves to coddle me like a loving mother, numb from the pain, for I am no prince or king. I'm a wild creature with a secret name, Noble. I kind of like this. There's a reason I like this, because there's two things that it really blends into nature. One, nature needs to be respected. When I look at the water and the ocean and the winter and the whirlpools, people often just take some of this stuff and they disregard it and they overlook it and they kind of think it's like whatever, and they don't show respect for it. You know, known people that have, like I said, they've gone out in those woods hiking. They think they've been there forever. They traverse along this mountain path that they've walked forever, And one little wrong turn, one little disorientation, one little slip, and they never come back. And it's becoming a complacency for where you are, a complacency for being in that type of setting, that type of scenario. I heard the story. There's a place I used to go to all the time called Crowder's Mountain, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And this mountain was beautiful to walk on, beautiful to travel on. They had many great paths. There was one gentleman who made it kind of a daily routine, his exercise routine, to walk along the paths of the mountain over and over again. And they were talking about how he absolutely loved the place. He thought it was, you know, he just became one with the mountain, one with everything around him. And I don't know if he got complacent, it was an accident, or he had a medical issue, but one day they found him that he slipped right alongside the mountain, and he passed away from the fall. And they weren't sure what happened to him, why it ended up like that, because he was so familiar with the place. And sometimes that's what we get with nature. We become so familiar with it that we're not sure how it works. We're not sure how it goes. And I think there needs to be a respect for nature as well with that. Well, I got someone on the line. Hello, Mocha.
Good morning, Jay. How are you today?
Good. I'm doing well. Good morning to you as well. It's great to have you here. I'm just talking about Dylan's poem here. There's a couple aspects I love about it. One, it shows that we need to respect nature because sometimes we take it too complacent. And the other is that I was going to go into was the freedom. You know, that sometimes when we look at nature, it's untamable, and we shouldn't try to tame that which is untamable. We just have to let it loose, let it go.
Totally hear you.
Let me try to turn my phone a little bit. All right, how you been doing?
I'm all right. I mean, struggling as per usual, but you know.
We all are. You know, it was really rough for me. You know, the states had the July 4th weekend. That was the Independence Day for the United States. And my factory decided to shut down the Thursday before the weekend, so I only worked 3 days that week. So it was a rough week last week for me, because I only got paid for 3 days.
Oh, my gosh. That's
yeah.
Not very July 4th.
No, but luckily I was still having part of the bonus that I had from before, so I could make it through. So I think that was the very important part to the whole thing. So I'm glad that I made it. Glad that it's now a new week and can start fresh and actually not worry about anything, because I'm good to go.
Oh,
all
that's
right.
Good to hear.
All right. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play another one of our audios here. And hold on 1 second. As soon as my phone behaves for me. Okay, I'm going to play. Shouldn't have downloaded that. But Let me play one of our audios. We don't have many audios today. We're going to have to do some reading. And I am expecting a caller.
No problem.
Probably within the next 10 minutes or so, we're expecting another caller. So let me go ahead and pull Steven. Here we go.
Gardens for Sorrow, Gardens for Pain by Steven 76. In gray matter hallways where memories roam, each room a duplicate from every home. Through windows I see them when eyelids are closed, some so new and vivid, others now reposed. Dining room of youth is there with avocado rug, wood paneling and chair railing, vlogs do pull and tug. Before boudoir, a small mudroom through 12 light wooden door, with Flemish glass distorting view, must open to see more. Past patio and screened-in walls and picnic table cues lies rooted soil of those extolled with petaled flower hues, dancing there within echo's breeze so vibrant and serene. Honeybees do tend to them to keep them clear and sheen. But past that plot there is a place where dead flowers only grow, for those who lay 2 yards deep and only thorns are sown. The pain that's felt when they're recalled bring balms of bittersweet, as tidal waves do pour from eyes, and water garden peat. End poem.
Wow, that was absolutely stunning. It was sad yet stunning, and but past that plot, there is a place where dead flowers only grow, for those who lay 2 yards deep, and only thorns are sown. There's a couple. And this is what is just fantastic, and I don't know if it's fantastic because there's a lot of places that are forgotten, especially here in the States, where you take a look at cemeteries, and they pretty much are unmanned, untaken care of, and forgotten. And what happens is that nature grows up around them and takes over, and that's kind of what I see here. I see a place where the nature has taken over and nature has come out, and we can't really we no longer see what used to be, but we see what is now. The abandoned cemeteries that I've been to and I've seen in my lifetime are amazing. Yeah, so I think that this one tells a great story about it. Mocha, what do you think about that?
I definitely see the whole feeling of that abandonment. Nobody's really sort of catering for this place. But more than anything, I think I feel sort of haunted by reading this because it gives me that sensation of sort of, if you think of your mind as a garden and he starts off mentioning gray matter hallways where memories, each room a duplicate from every home, definitely gives me this feeling of sort of being haunted by your own memories. And, your whole mind can end up like a plot where only dead flowers grow if you get stuck in those memories. It's like, it kind of reminds me of sort of walking through your mind and like walking down memory lane, but not in a good way. Does that make sense to you, Jay?
Yeah, it really does. I think that's a great mention right there, because you're right. There is a hauntingness. Let me see. I was some of the lost cemeteries where I used to live down in North Carolina were in the middle of the woods. And I'm kind of relating here in reality as well as the metaphor when you're talking about in the mind and taking that walk, because there's one that's behind a factory, and it's in the middle of the woods right next to, you have to go to the railroad, walk around the factory through the woods. You have to rough it through the woods in order to find the old logging roads that are still set up, and one dead ends at this old cemetery that has a bunch of graves but only one gravestone, and it's all grown up and all you see are the indentions of the graves themselves. And if you drop that like into a mindset, I think that that it kind of gives you a whole different perspective of the rite itself, the poem itself. Can you see it that way?
Yeah, I see what you're talking about. Definitely.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to go to the next poem. Steve, just an absolute wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And this poem, they specifically asked for you to read it. They said,
oh,
I want Mocha to read this one. And this is from Driscona, Femora the Soul Weavers. So whenever you are ready.
All right. Sun Drops and Butterfly Kisses by Femora the Soul Weaver. Butterflies dancing around tulips, kissing all the flowers of the day. The sun shone on every living thing, life to all things, bringing light to the darkness, spreading itself across the horizon. Dew kisses each petal, each leaf, bright, bold, and beautiful. And calm.
Wait a second. What? This was Driscona. Oh, a nice change for her. I love that. I absolutely love it.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's awesome as the meadow that I live across from actually has milkweed. And milkweed is one of these weeds that draws monarch butterflies. And I love it whenever something like that is brought up. Whenever butterflies is brought up, I always look for the monarchs, and I think that is so cool that she would bring something like that up. Now I'm going to drop a picture of my, let me see, I think that's it right there. I'm going to drop a picture on the board of the meadow that I'm talking about, but what do you think reading that? That's great read, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I thought it was beautiful, actually, scene. Never seen your Driscona write. It's definitely nice to experience, you know. It was all very, it was literally rainbows and tulips.
I know.
Bright and sparkly for her, and I'm not used to her doing sparkly all the time, but I think it's really cool.
Yeah, whenever you can grab a hold of,
definitely
grab
a
hold of. Yeah, whenever you can grab a hold of something like that, it shows that there's moments in your life that things are grabbing a hold and creating those sunshine moments. And I just dropped a picture of my meadow. I call it my meadow. It's not really mine, but I love to walk through it, and it's got milkweed and monarch butterflies, red-winged blackbirds. And
that's a gorgeous picture.
I love this place. It's one of my getaway places that that I relax and just chill out in. And like I said, I'm going to be bringing many of the pictures that I've been taking around around the area, whether it be simplistic things or complex things. But yeah, I love this. This is a nice little tale of nature, and I think it blends in quite well. I think we just did a beautiful job. Now, let's see where I want to go from here. I'm going to read next. Let me see. I'll read next. Now, how about we do, let's do Titus. Let's go ahead and do Titus's audio. And we all love to hear Titus. So, a little something called Hortensia.
Hortensia. The dew has hoisted its exalt as the sun arose. Umbels were yet to be seen, but bearing down before we take to the stage, chlorophyll gown had gathered back its bold but beautiful pose. Curtains I consider best while nature's preen. It gives bucolic scene spring feeling. It shows unknowingly the time and place, high on toes. Summer takes its place from a beautiful spring. Lifting the auditorium sunlight, the superfluous adornment, tiny clusters adapt the many fractal, each to their own immodesty to become tactile, in unison and sway with a deep inner snugness. I suggest the early summer to initiate openings, a Swan Lake adventure, tinged with blue tips. They'll dare not hesitate to wear the beige slips, pure the ardent whispers birth of Venus brings. 'Tis together they will choose that one, if it were, to keep fulfillment with this wonderful intimacy. Ballerinas who have instilled innocent delicacy between themselves and the eye of the beholder. For months on end, the flowering season, it will entertain the audience, the green-fingered variety. Forever and a day will extend this social society. Free will, their petals are a supporting role to seal.
Were we just sitting in an auditorium watching Swan Lake?
Is that what you were doing? I was so taken by his language. I was here trying to define every word.
It's beautiful how, and this is what I love about this piece, because what it does is it shows how humanity, people in themselves, have taken nature, things of nature, and have turned them into art forms. They've turned them into dancing. They've turned them into the different paintings and songs. And every single art form that you can think of humanity, they've taken nature and they've melted it into different parts. And I think that this poem right here is a celebration of that art form, that natural art form, you know, no matter who it is, no matter what they say. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful piece, and you're right about the wording. The wording is just taking nature and building up the art within the nature, or the nature within the art. There you go.
Really, I almost forgot that this poem was about flowers for a brief second. And you are right, Jay, in that in every art form that we have, nature takes a huge, huge influence. It's one of few subjects that I think is touched on in every single art form or appreciated in every single art form. You know, you always have to start with nature first, and then you expand to topics beyond that. But you kind of need to touch on nature first because it's the core of everything. And the way Titus wrote about these flowers and the Swan Lake, I think drawing that comparison was, first of all, very brilliant and beautiful to make. Because if you look at the picture, the flower petals themselves sort of remind you of the ballerina's skirts, their tutus.
Yeah.
And it makes complete and perfect sense to me. So reading this poem was sort of like, I don't know, you know how they have those images of fairies, like Tinkerbell, using leaves and stuff to make clothes? I sort of just pictured like a fairy version of like happening with those fairies using those flower petals as skirts, which is like pretty childish on my part, I guess, but that's sort of what it felt like. It felt like the entire thing just coming alive.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's childish. I don't think it's childish at all. I think it's kind of normal for people to jump into that type of feeling, that type of feeling like they're younger, type of feeling like they're in like a magical place. Who cares if someone grabs a hold of who they used to be with their little imagination and their little feelings? Because I think that's the way in life you stay younger, by holding on to that which is younger.
You have a very, very legitimate point. The language that Titus used in this poem is really something, because he uses quite a few scientific words that sound graceful. Usually a lot of terms in chemistry do not roll off the in a very graceful way. You know, you wouldn't normally expect, I think, to see Titus use phrase like chlorophyll gown, which I actually loved, or the bucolic scenes. You know, all of that, a little bit unexpected, but I think it just adds a whole new dimension to the poem. That sense of magic that he gave us with the fairies, but also this reminder that this is very real by using science in small ways to describe what's going on. It's both calculated and magical at the same point in time.
I think that's a wonderful point. We're like where the adult and the child meet, and where the academia and the imagination meet. And I think that he has brought us to that place.
Yeah, and definitely done it with style. Unusual Titus fashion.
Yeah, brilliant, and it's just a wonderful feel. All right.
I mean, it's so soothing to him.
It really is. It's like, let's just sit outside while Uncle Titus reads us a story. All right. Well, I'm going to read a poem from Dante, and this is called Beach. I'm kind of excited about this. Alone, 2 feet in the sand, the shallow water moving slow in between, walking past a couple laughing, dancing and kissing, smiling at each other, of a piece of paper. This could have been you and me. Water crashing against my legs, oh, so cold, yet oh, so slow, as a bottle comes in between, empty and oh, so bright, slowly drifting back away, oh, so far away. The ocean breeze whistles soft as I hear, te amo, mi amore, the way you used to do, but here I am. Alone, walking in the sand. Excuse me, Dante. Grab a beer out of the cooler. Chill with us. Leave your thoughts. Snap back to reality, effortless by two little girls playing in the sand. Uncle Dante, don't leave again. Stay here and just let it out. All of the pain of your chest. Yet I wish I could, but that's not my best. Write it out. Write it all out again. Walk back to that bottle. Stick it in. Throw it away. Watch as it drifts, only to see a couple pick it up and smile at the text. Oh, so sweet. A little love piece. Poem. So brilliant, so beautiful, yet so sad. There's so much to this, so much depth. He just wove some incredible depth within this poem. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. And I'm going to let you comment, Mocha. But first, we have a visitor to the living room. So let us welcome Deb. Hey, Deb.
Hello, you two. How's the king and queen today?
All right.
How are you, Deb?
Hanging in there. A little bit hot today. How about you?
Geez, I haven't even checked the weather.
Honestly, I'm inside, so.
Yeah,
we're just
starting into a heat wave, so we shall see how many days and nights in a row we get.
Ooh, it's gorgeous here. And I'm going to tell you, Mocha lives with that heat all the time, so. We can't complain about heat.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
Well, I think it's probably not as much the heat as the thick humidity where you can't breathe. It makes a big difference when it's extra humid. Like, I know that Hatter was complaining because they were having triple digits out there.
Mocha lives on a Caribbean island. I'm sure she's got humidity there.
Yeah, but she's on an island, which means she's got access to lots of ocean, too. I'm jealous.
But it's windy, too. So, you know, it's not like hot and still desert hot. I'm pretty sure the United States gets some different kinds of heat versus we get.
Yeah, because if you're sweating and it's windy, at least it's like little fans that cool you off when it hits the sweat. But, man, sometimes you get no air, no breeze, and thick humidity, and you just want to hide in the house.
No, trust me. I know that feeling. I'm imagining that's kind of what outside feels like to me right now because it's half overcast and half bright and sunny, and it's the middle of the day.
Hug.
Yeah, we got the fluffy clouds right now, beautiful blue skies with partly fluffy clouds out there. So it's a little cool here, so it feels really nice where I'm at. Mocha, what do you think about Dante's poem?
I think Dante's poem was really brilliant and very, very heartfelt. I actually loved the entire metaphor of the beach and the water, the entire scene, the idea of him finding an empty bottle and putting some sort of sweet romantic mess in it for someone to find, knowing fully well that his own love is not at the greatest point for him right now. Letting joy, even you yourself, is not very joyful. And, you know, not being bitter towards one who has something that you want, but rather encouraging them. So as dim as his personal situation or his personal relation to the beach might feel, he was still able to drag himself back out of it and back to real life. And furthermore, be able to provide joy to other people, even if not provided to him directly. The part that really got me in my feels, I think, was when he says, snaps back to reality, effortless by two little girls playing in the sand, Uncle Dante don't forget. That part, I think, really hit me hard because there really is nothing like the innocence of your child relatives to sort of force you out of whatever depression or dark train of thought that you're in. There's no arguing with children, you know, and you definitely sort of, if anybody has, you don't even have to raise kids, but if you've been close to any sort of child that you're related to in any way, you might understand what I'm saying. They ask something. It's really hard to deny them, regardless of what you're going through. That, having them specifically remind him that, you know, he is loved, there are people who want you here, regardless of whatever it is you feel like you're going through. I think those two little girls are very pivotal moments in the entire scene and perhaps could be what inspired him to pull that bottle out of the ocean, right, beautiful, and stick it in and throw it away, only to see the next couple pick it up. The storytelling. I think Dante's really, really evolved the way that he's writing now. I mean, this is miles past, I think, what he used to do. I think this is so complex. Honestly, I love to see how much he's grown.
No, you're absolutely right, and you said it more eloquently than I ever could, and I'm glad you did. Because there's a lot of points that I saw exactly what you said on this. Well, here's what I'm going to do, and here's the order of things. We're going to have Deb read hers, then we're going to have you read yours, Mocha, and then we'll have Deb read Becky's, and then I will come back and read mine. because Becky has asked that Deb read hers. So, Deb, if you want to make a comment on Dante's, you may, and then we're going to put your poem on the board.
Yeah, I'd love to, because I dialed in while you were reading. And I have to say, it was a heartfelt write, but I agree with Mocha. There's something in that. Snapped back to reality, effortless by two little girls playing in the sand. And when, Jay, when you read Uncle Dante, Don't Leave Again, I got goosebumps. It was like, you know, stay out here, just let it out. And you just kind of felt these little girls and their love and concern for their uncle trying to make him feel better, all in that one little stanza, let alone all the rest of the powerhouse write that came with it. I'm thinking that this might be my favorite of his. It's so powerfully emotional. So excellent share.
Absolutely agree with you on that one. And Deb, you're up.
Doki. Hi, my twin. I see you out there.
Hey, Becky.
Okay. This is a little story poem. It's called A Day in the Kingdom of the Dandelion Princess. And here we go. Under the cornflower blue sky hue, as the pearl shrouds of clouds roams, the winds rock the water to the banks, then the waterfall splashes as it foams. By the wetlands of the sycamore forest, inside the village full of tree trunk homes, dwells the lace-winged dandelion princess and her animated crew of garden gnomes. Oak stumps house the elves and fairies. Springtails dwell neath toadstool domes. Black-dotted ladybugs spin spirals with purple and turquoise dragonflies, then land to sip milkweed nectar as white moths circle ebony butterflies. Trumpet vines climbing the fortress, blossoming with big coral pastel flowers. Honeysuckles cling like an ivy archway, dangling off limbs and branching towers. Now, the princess talks with grasshoppers that chat up the crickets for 3 hours, eating sweet papaya off the pawpaw tree. Almond-colored cumulus dump showers. The sun tosses rainbows onto the ridge that arc over the castle and the moat. Alligators swim past the drawbridge, handmade in mahogany wood, and a buzz echoes from the honeybees, swarming blooms of fruited trees full of red pomegranates and cherries, growing by nectarines and apricots, perfuming the heated afternoon breeze. At twilight, as the harvest moon hovers, fireflies freckle the woods with light, blinking on the dandelion princess, sleeping under Earth's nightlight. End poem.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's so amazing. You brought out your crayon box again, wrote from that, but, you know, you brought me to, I feel like it's like a fairy forest. You brought me to A Midsummer Night's Dream, mixed in with a little bit of Neverland when you talked about the gator. And I was thinking TikTok there. I was like, there's so much different things within this this poem that is just so magical. It's so magical, yet at the same time, it's such a mix with nature. And there's so much, nature is a magical thing. And we were mentioning early how nature gets pulled into art. I believe that nature also gets pulled into fantasy and storytelling. And this is what you've done here, is mm-hmm. you've brought us into this wonderful story of how nature did bring us into a fantasy world. Yet at the same time, we can relate to it. We can blend into it. We can make it part of us because it is what we live through. I mean, the honeysuckle always gets to me because of the fact that I used to have honeysuckle when I lived down in North Carolina. I'm pretty sure Becky, who lives in the same city that I used to live in, understands that honeysuckle as well, because you pick it off the vine and you can just drink the nectar straight from the flowers. And it's such a cool, neat little thing. I think it's fantastic. You did a wonderful job with that. Mocha, what do you think?
Thank you so much.
I think this belongs in a children's book with some really nice drawings. Really, she started to read, and it kind of gave me this reminiscent, you know, how I would feel reading Dr. Seuss as a kid, where it transforms, like, it transports you to this cool place that doesn't exist, but it absolutely does exist in your mind, child. And the more and more you read, the more and more you fall into this magical world. The world sort of fills itself around you. And I think this concept of the dandelion princess, I think she's a wonderful character. I could sort of picture her, like, in a little fluffy ball gown made up of a dandelion. It's the cutest thing ever in my brain. And I definitely think this makes a wonderful bedtime story for kids. It's beautiful. And you did use so much of nature in it. There's the flowers, those rocks. You mentioned springtails, which, I mean, I love springtails. They're these random, adorable, extremely, extremely tiny little bugs that are actually responsible for sort of consuming decaying matter, decaying plant matter, and they help clean the forest. You don't really see them unless you look for them. They're about less than the size of your fingertip. And when you do catch them, they do this hop where they sort of disappear, because they hop so fast, you don't even see where they go. And it's amazing that these little critters hop in such distances. I'm just here picturing this dandelion princess maybe catching a ride on the back of a springtail, you know, for transportation purposes. It was beautiful and really magical, and that Debs really went all out with the crayon box and the plant. When you mentioned papaya and pawpaw, that called to me as a Caribbean person, because I pass papaya trees all the time. My mom loves pawpaw, and like I can literally pick a pawpaw tree and go pick one, you know. So that, all that,
wow,
close to home for me.
Hey, we got someone else on the line, folks. It's some international number here. Hello, hello. Yes, we do.
Hi, JCA. How are you?
I thought it was you, AP. What's going on, man?
It's the middle of the night, and I'm awake for some strange reason, so I thought I'd call.
I know. I was taking a look at that. I'm thinking, what time is it in Australia? I'm like, oh, my goodness.
It's
fancy,
like,
meeting you here.
Awful. I know, Deb. No, it's awful. It's like 3:30 in the morning. It's like ridiculous time. You know, it's like dumb time. But anyway, I'm awake, so I thought I'd call.
Oh, that's
cool.
Wonderful. You got a nature poem for us, my friend?
Well, do you want a dark nature poem, or do you want a lighter, more friendly nature poem?
Well, we'll ask Mocha. Mocha, which one would you like?
I haven't had a dark one yet. I want a dark one today.
You want a dark one? We can do a dark one if you like.
Absolutely, yes. I would love to see more people twist nature with a dark theme, actually. So far, it's been a lot of rainbows and puppies.
Yeah, okay, we can do better than that then. Is that, are you happy for me to read JCA and my me, given that I am in the middle of the night, God knows what it'll come out like, but anyway, we can try.
Okay, go ahead.
No. This is On the Moors, and it goes a little bit like this. Lasers a lone path on a faint meadow, blaze as it winds through the lush grass, and not a sound could be heard around, except the whistle of winds off the pass. Upon these high distant stone rises, you traverse these cold frigid moors, yet within the mud were lumps of blood from battles fought decades before. Congealed and frozen into the snow, so fixed even the birds could not dine upon pieces of bone from soldiers unknown, their battles now against those divine. And from a distance appeared stone, a white curl of quartz trimmed with pink, near, when eyes returned seer, stare of a fixed that would never blink. End poem.
That was amazing. You reminded me of a place in North Carolina that I used to go to. The school was built around near a battlefield from the American, I believe it was American Revolutionary War. Yeah, it was the Revolutionary War. Right. Yeah, it was the American Revolutionary War, and that was back in the 1700s. And ultimately, they built this school nearby. And as you go around and walk around the school, the grounds are open because there are grave sites around that school. And if you don't look carefully, you'll miss them. And they show you where the... there's a mass grave for the low-ranking soldiers, and you turn around, and there's one grave for a higher-ranking soldier, so you know the name of that person, and you can actually walk out. You're very close to where the battlefield itself was. There was an old mill by there and everything like that. So that's kind of what you reminded me of. In this story, I love the rhyme scheme, how you put the rhyme scheme together. Now that is fantastic as well, but ultimately you bring me to memories, and that's what I like about some amazing poetry, when they can bring you to a place that you've been, that you've seen, and that you can relate to. I think that is one fantastic part, and that's what you brought me to. You brought me to a place in my past that I've actually been able to see and actually been able to go to.
Thank you.
Mocha, what do you think?
I think I'm really glad that I asked AP for a dark nature poem. I love the direction this went. I mean, so far on the show, we've been talking about nature and all the bright sort of joyous aspects of it, the sort of beginning, middle, growing aspects of it, but nobody has focused on nature sort of bringing ends to things or presenting ends of things. And it does, you know, everything in nature is a cycle, so there is a beginning, a middle, and an end. I think this poem in particular is very representative of reaching that end. It's sort of a scene of nature preserving that happened way, way in the past. Why we say certain places are haunted. I think nature sort of absorbs the energy of each event that happened in it or around it. We sort of help define the land as human beings with the way we interact with it after a while, which is why we have places like what you just Jay. And for example, for me, the place that it brought to mind was there's a place in Tobago called Bloody Bay. And you can imagine it's called that because there was a very large, very bloody battle that happened there. Actually, other places in Tobago like that or that have a history like that, a lot of the most beautiful beaches that you see people bathing on a couple of years ago would have been essentially a really good point to start a siege. And so while today we are all, you know, walking along the sand and bathing in the sea with our families, like everything is normal and everything is wonderful and peaceful, if you just rewind time in that same spot for a few years, the setting is going to be absolutely different. You know, we bathe a lot in the ocean without thinking about how many dead bodies are under there, you know? And we traverse the land or we dig up land without thinking, you know, it's definitely something to think about. The way that AP describes this scene with the high stone rises and the cold Persian moors, and within the mud were lumps of blood from battles fought decades before. We totally forget about that at every point in time because this is not specific to this one location that AP is talking about. Everywhere in the world, at one point in time, there was a struggle or a conflict for that piece of land, for people to settle down, whether it was people fighting against nature itself to be able to settle on. There were battles fought on this land, and I think that makes every single inch of land sacred in a way. And I think this poem has done a wonderful job of encapsulating everything that I was being way too wordy just now to say, and surmising that with this very vivid and yet at this time sort of bleak scene that AP painted in these wonderful gray. I think this is an amazing poem, and thank you, AP, for bringing it and joining us at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Be awake, and so I just sort of happened to call. I won't promise to do it all the time, but I just sort of, well, you were on, I'm awake, so we might as well try this. So.
Might as well. Hey, Deb, what do you think?
Oh, I thought it was excellent, and if you look at the photo, there's like, if you see the grayish line that sort of swirls, and then there's these, excuse me, patches that actually look like the outlines of the ghosts marching, which really, really pulls into the second stanza, upon these high distance stone rises, few traverse these cold frigid moors, yet within the mud were lumps of blood from battles fought decades before. And you could actually really think about the people because of there's something in the art. I think that the poem speaks highly for the art and gives it like a backstory and a history. And then, of course, I really like the pattern of this one. I think I might have put that in my, yeah, I like the pattern that he wrote in, but I especially like the feel and the, like I said, the history that brought the story. So good choice.
Thanks, Dave.
Great comment there. What I'm going to do is have Mocha read her poem next.
Already? Okay, here we go. This one is called Closely Apart. She was the swooshing swell of rivers. He was the cold stillness of lakes. Their waters were met, but the moon danced over their waves just the same. She was the braided sway of palm trees. He stood prickly and rigid as a pine.
their branches never touched, but their leaves rejoiced in sunlight, just the same. And they grew together. End poem.
This is such a beautiful piece, and I've said it before. You know, you can make something so beautiful out of your words, and this right here was a fantastic piece. You know, even though that there is the distance and there is a commonality, there's something that pulls them together. And it is within this nature. It is within the waters. It is within the wind. And you combine them together and you make them their own individuality. But at the same time, you show that they have a common. The way I like to look at this is you got two trees and they share a common earth. And there's a possibility that their root structure underneath that earth is actually touching each other. And that's the way that I've always looked at this piece. I think that it is a beautiful nature piece, and it's a beautiful metaphor for two people who, you know, who join together and grow together, though they may not be physically together. I think that this is absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Deb, what do you think?
I think this is an amazing brevity. I can feel the sadness and the she's the swooshing swells and he's the cool stillness. There's something, the waters never met. I mean, just that part, those first three lines set up the mood of the poem, and then the moon danced over the waves just the same. It was just, and then, oh, wait a minute, where's the other? But their leaves rejoiced in the sunlight just the same. So the repeat of just the same, it's like, yeah, there's sadness, but they danced, or there's sadness, but the leaves rejoiced in the sunlight. So there's the back and forth, the good and bad, the yin and yang, the whole deal, you know. But I think that it's a very powerful brevity, and then I'm very impressed.
Thanks, Deb.
And AP, what do you think?
The words and it's
a little AP.
Hold on, take it up. I'll put the phone on my shoulder here. How's that? Is that a little bit better?
Oh, a lot better.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Look, there's a lovely sense of togetherness about it, and in both pieces, there's the water and there's the trees, and both are together but apart, and it's kind of lovely because both of them in both cases are independent of each other but are intimately connected. And I sort of think about, you know, the wings of a butterfly effect here, you know, where, you know, the wings of a butterfly go and affect great oceans on the other side of the world because of the beating of the wings of a butterfly. And there's this tremendous connectedness and being integrated about nature. These paragraphs and stanzas sort of bring me to that.
Thank you, AP.
All right. I'm going to change it up just a little bit right now. I'm going to read mine next, and then we'll do Becky's right after that. And this one I just got done writing before the show, and it's called Three Things at the River. And this is an actual picture I took of a sunset at one of my favorite fishing places. And Nuno had a contest about sunsets, so I wanted to head and write about his write for his contest. So Three Things at the River. Genesis breaths evade my titanium lungs as the plum sunset walks in the soldier's muled spine. Sterling silver smile of the cappuccino sunrise girl swirls in the serotonin-soaked battlefield brain. Navy barn swallows and the little brown bats twerk and twitch in the aerial acrobatics, and the fishing line waits for the predator golden carp or the gunmetal channel catfish to pounce on the squiggly nightcrawler bait ball. Wheatgrass and the nettles bend in the southern breeze, tracing the olive skin like the Caribbean whispers. Duckweed and emerald milfoil hula bobbing in the cadmium moonbeam reflections, dancing in the aquamarine crystal river. The vintage eggshell paint peeled oaken shack recites the chaw tobacco straw hat farmers and the blue onyx button-up Amish who dip the cane pole over the sandalwood banks before the beastly floods ripped open the sandstone soil. And in my ribcage floats three things: the river, the sunset, and you. Poem.
Wow, Jay. I love the way it started off with the Genesis breath, because as we know, Genesis is a book in the Bible where all of nature and man was created. So, perfect opening line. I love your descriptions, as per usual, the way you use some of the crayons and your extensive knowledge of botany with your very quirky and unique way of describing things, like the navy barn swallows and the little brown bat twerk and twitch, aerial acrobatics. Honestly, when you said the little brown bat twerk, I had the silliest image in my mind, of course, but it was such a cute usage of words. Like, it rolls off the tongue so nicely. I can literally sort of picture the scene that you've set up here, and you really described the picture very, very well, the image that you chose. I can literally picture you sitting on the bank and casting your fishing line and just sitting, waiting for your first bite, the sunset in the background. I think you paint a really gorgeous picture. And then the ending, the last two lines, in my ribcage, those three things, to the sunset and you. It's just wow, you know, just a punch of emotion there at the end. This feeling of sitting there reminiscing or sort of daydreaming almost while you sit there and fish and watch the time go by via the sunset, I think it was a really, really beautiful, very well done poem, Jay. Deb, what did you think about that poem?
Thank you.
Well, let's start with the end, because I agree with you that the couplet there is quite breathtaking. And in my ribcage floats three images: the river, the sunset, and you. Great, great, great ending. But I think all the way through that you set the tone, you filled it with images and sounds and sights and scents that tickle all five senses. I think that, like the navy barn swallows and the little brown bats that twerk and twitch and aerial acrobatics, I thought that was really cute. I could even picture, because it, I guess, you know, kind of a twerking motion going on there. But it was and bubbling in the cadmium moonbeam reflections, dancing in the aquamarine crystal river. What an image. I mean, I think that you really did a fantastic job with this, and I can't believe you just wrote it a couple hours. Oh, you entered a contest. I bet you'll do well in it, too. And a 10 to boot. Great right, Jay.
Thank you.
Right? He keeps count these tens like they're so easy. AB, what did you think of that poem?
I really like the use of colors, Michael, because they're unusual. The thing about colors is that often they get stereotypically used, and very often at the end of day, you know, you can pick up 25 poems and they all look and feel the same because it's the same colors and the same feel to it, and this one doesn't at all. And that is kind of nice, that it sort of stakes out its own territory with, you know, gunmetal and sterling silver and wheatgrass and cadmium and aquamarine and eggshells and the descriptive words that are very distinctive and used brilliantly well, but not the sort of set of, you know, stereotypical ways we're seeing at the end of the day, and that's something really, really nice to read.
Yeah.
No. Thank you.
I agree. I don't think Jay ever uses any descriptive language in a series. I think that's why it's always sort of exciting to read what he does with poems, especially when you give him prompts. For example, like in Deborah's competition, where everybody has essentially the same group of words, but to see how everyone uses the textures and colors differently. I mean, Jay always approaches that in a very, very unique way, and I think that definitely speaks to how unique he approaches writing and describing things. He's a very unique way of looking at things, and his unique perspective then puts him in a place to be able to write like this, and I admire that a lot about your style, Jay.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And up next, we have a request for Deb to read a little bit of Becky.
And I'm
love
going to attempt to go back to sleep here. Joe, so thank
you.
You
got to get going, AP.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Deb. Yeah, so
yeah,
thank you.
Go to bed, AP.
Oh, that's what I'm going to try and
do.
You know. Yeah, but thank you for letting me drop past. And as I said, I'm not sure it'll be a regular thing, but if I'm awake, I'll be here.
All right, I appreciate that.
Love and respect.
Okay. Talk soon.
Cheers, mate.
All right, Deb.
All right, for my twin, Becky Friend. I want to be cool and tall with a Dixie drawl. Here we go. If I lived my daydreams, I'd grow among the evergreens on the highest ledge of the rolling blue ridge along the spine of Carolina. Nestled in the breast of Appalachia, where the wind whispers abracadabra and the mountain peaks begin to speak. Poems written with every breeze, palms and petals and leaves, finger painting in the air with curlicues and zigzags, a sign language rhyme underlined in vines. While white beard tongues, sorry about that, while white beard tongues wag a ragtime pantomime, baneberries wiggle a rain dance, and young rhododendron, my grand and grandchildren, bob, band of honey locust ponds, where even the wood anemones seem closely akin to me. Long, cool woman in a black dress, I have it all. Sunshine and a Dixie drawl. Dr. Doolittle rhymes and a repertoire of bird calls. Ambassador to the animals serving sassafras tea, steeped from weed and sweet melon rind. The place I can find at my back of my mind, in a world evergreen mingling with every creature of the sky, hills, and streams, if I lived my daydream. End poem.
I think the only thing she's missing is the magnolias, because that reminded me right there of going to, I used to live there. I used to live there. I used to go there. I know exactly what she's talking about, where she's talking about it. I love the Blue Ridge Mountains. Blue Ridge Parkway, so scenic, so gorgeous, so beautiful. This whole thing is just it's a joy to read, because it reminds me of so many things. With every creature of the sky, hills, and streams, I used to walk along those streams, the Jacobs River, where you walk in, it'd be ice cold. The trout would be swimming everywhere. You move a little rock and you see the salamanders. You find a pool and you see the crayfish right in there. And all around you, the different types of birds are singing and saying and everything, and you hear the animals in the distance, and you know that there's raccoon, possums, bears, and everything imaginable around. And that this whole thing is just, it reminds me of a place I used to call home. And I think that is just an absolutely stunning way of writing this whole thing, and the imagery is just breathtaking, because it's so relatable for me. It's where I used to live. Mocha, what do you think about this?
Well, I think, first of all, great read, Deb. You really added a wonderful mood to the poem, and you're so close to Becky's voice that I can totally understand why I asked you to read. But this poem gives me this poem gives me sort of, is it Cinderella or is it Snow White? I think it's Snow White, where she walks through the forest and walks through singing, and all the animals come to her. It sort of gives me that vibe of Becky walking through the forest and all the chipmunks and the birds sort of flock around her, and she's perfectly at one with nature, that she almost seems to be the queen or the princess of this piece of the forest. And her descriptive language is so great. I have never been anywhere near the Spine Carolina or the breast of the Appalachian Mountains or anything like that, but the way she described it, it felt like I was walking with her along that forest path and seeing all of the beautiful views that she's seeing of she says, the wind whispers abracadabra and the mountain peak to speak. I think it's beautiful that she whispers abracadabra. It's like she suggests that the magic itself, you know, the wind itself whispers a spell to these and to the mountain and allows them to begin to speak. I love that she mentions sign language rhyme underlined in vines, while white beard tongues wag a ragtime pantomime, because it captures the movement of trees and leaves with, and in a way that it makes them seem like they're speaking to each other. And it sort of does when you observe that in real life, how it blows and the trees all sway in unison, in the same direction, back and forth. It really does look as they are dancing or signaling to each other. I love that she used sign language as the way she describes it, because if you seeing people use sign language, at first it looks a little bit odd, and then after a while it just sort of flows. It looks like a natural sort of dance almost when someone's really good at sign language. So I love that. I loved that she refers to her flowers as her grinning children. If you're a plant mom, you definitely, definitely understand and relate to that feeling. Well, your plants are your children. You talk to them, you sing to them, you care for them. You know, I think it's wonderful, wonderful. And it's apparently inspired by a song. And now having read this poem and having this image of this long, cool woman in a black dress, I want to hear the song now to further understand her inspiration and her mood. But
little
I think
Creedence
this is an amazing
little Creedence Clearwater Revival there. And you mentioning Snow White, you know, she put a picture of Disney Snow White. I was thinking Shrek, you brought me to that image of Shrek Snow White when she broke into a little Led Zeppelin, you know. And I'm like, sorry, but I couldn't help myself. Oh, man. Deb, you get that, I guess you get that last comment and then you got to go.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that the images all through here brought us there with her. And I love that she incorporated all the things that are like, what's the word, indigenous to her area and introduced us. Because, like, I had never heard of beard tongues. That's what caught me up for a moment. And I hate when I butcher somebody's read, but it was a new word to me. I don't know what a beard tongue is, but I'm going to look. But yeah, I the image all through it, it was like she pulled us in. She surrounded us with all the things she loves, even her grandbabies, and drove us home. And with all the things she shared, and I mean, down to that sassafras tea, it was like, what more could you ask for to be surrounded by so much? And I love that it ends with, if I lived my daydreams. Well, it sure kind of sounds to me like she is living that daydream. I thought it was excellent. And like I said, it's always an honor to be her reader. And on that note, I have to go, but I had fun with the two of you. Thanks for the Jay. And Mocha, it was great to hear you. And I look forward to seeing what the topic is next week. Love and respect to you both.
No problem. Can you make a little plug for what's coming up on you guys' radio, and then?
Oh, sure.
We'll
yeah. At 11:30, Hatter's going to light up the studio, and he's going to chat about the Brothers Gibb. He's got some BG songs that he's going to go over, and then once he does that part, he's hoping to still have enough time to dissect the lyrics for American Pie. So we'll see how that goes. And there's a few things going on. So the next show after that, excuse me, won't be my show on Monday. And I am trying to remember which one. Here it is. Okay, I couldn't find my prompt. Okay, so I have a multiple prompt show. It's a new artist with some really beautiful art, but then I have multiple word banks. I have what you hear, things you touch, things you taste and smell, and colors you see, and you get to pick random words from each of those banks and tickle all five of my senses with your poetry. So that's Monday at 10, and that's the next couple shows. Appreciate you both.
Thank you for coming, Deb. We really appreciate you.
Thanks for coming, Deb.
Appreciate you back. Love and respect, guys.
All right. Well, we just got a few more poems left, and I'm going to make you read most of them.
Thanks.
No problem. We'll start off in Florida, if you want to go ahead and read a little Garden Delights for us.
Sure. This is called A Floridian Snapshot by Garden Delights. Looming exceedingly large, peace lilies dominate my huge front window. Tall,
observing me like ghost supervisors, right? My banyan tree has misread the calendar and is dropping thousands of leaves hourly in springtime. Good thing I can compost them and reuse them. Hawks cry mournfully from their nests. Mom and dad both leave to hunt. Possibly babies feel abandoned or just missing them. New troublemakers arrived. Juvie eastern lover grasshoppers paused on a garbage can, menacing in demeanor. I read how I would not welcome them in my garden. Darn. Yesterday, a mourning dove couple found the bird bath and fountain for the first time. Sadly, later in the day, I discovered one of them dead, lying neatly on its back. It simply looked asleep. Silly. The cycle of life and death continues. One, I too, will not escape. End poem.
Wow, I think that this is quite amazing because it doesn't just show the wonder of nature itself, the beauty in nature, but it also shows the full life in nature, the cycles of nature. And I take a look at the grasshoppers. I remember when I was in North Carolina, I was growing cucumbers. But we had these Japanese beetles that absolutely ravaged my cucumbers. So I only got like one or two harvests before they were completely destroyed. And I can understand what she's going through with those grasshoppers, you know, because they will destroy the garden. They will eat stuff up in there. And I think that right there is a perfect picture. Plus, you know, animals, they die all the time. And I think that that is an amazing thing as well. Beautiful read, by the way. Like I said, that when we're talking about it, we're talking about the full cycle, the full going around, and I think it's a beautiful depiction of that and a beautiful picture of that. Mocha, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. The moment I got to the that I made earlier with AP, that nature is very cyclical. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end to it, and I'm glad that she explored that. And she did it in a way that was very natural. It was not very forced at all. She just is sort of describing everything that she sees around her in her own yard. And simple as what she finds in her own yard, it shows you the cyclical nature of, you know, there's birds, baby hawks in their nests, and by the beginning of life, you know, and then she comes down to the end, the bird that she found in the bath, the one that she found, unfortunately, dead. It sort of brings the entire cycle to a close, from the baby birds to the one that passed at the end. It really is a wonderful sort of snapshot or summary of a lot of the different processes that happen in nature. There is the changing of the seasons that she mentioned, the banyan tree misreading the calendar and dropping thousands of leaves hourly. And then she also mentions composting them and reusing them, which is another sort of thing that puts nature back into the cycle, you know? She mentions some of the struggles that you just naturally face in life. You know, every aspect of life faces a struggle. Plants, animals, everything has a natural predator, essentially, and everything has a natural programming to survive. Those grasshoppers that are menacing her garden, they're just trying to survive, and that's another part of the cycle, you know. And she covered each of it with nothing more than simple observation. I loved the way that she documented it. Just so forward and to the point. And instead of telling you, you know, what she's talking about or what to feel, she just sort of tells you what she observes and you feel it for yourself from the imagery. I love poems that are written like that. And I think this is a really awesome, awesome job and addition to the show today.
That is an awesome comment. Well, I have decided I'm going to have you read back to back because I want to finish the show up with something special.
Okay.
So I was kind of waiting to see if Irish Rose is going to show up, but we only have like 12 minutes. So I'm going to have you sing her. We're going from Florida all the way to California. So you got a little Irish Rose to read.
Okay. Poem is titled Unsung Song by Irish Rose. The sunset rests its weary head down the grove of old pine trees bed. Across a far pond, wooden foot walk out among the young tangled cattail stalks blowing. In a warm golden wind, spinning free, whispering poetry to the woman that waits quietly, listen to the silhouette and flowers talk, harmonizing tonight's unsung song, a gently performed sound in DM Nocturne. Poem.
This is beautiful. This is once again nature coming to art. That ending there is D minor nocturne. And I know that I didn't get to play the music that is within there, didn't have time to upload it, but I know that she usually plays when everything, and it is definitely something to listen to in our off time. It's called, what's that, Secret Garden? I'm taking a look at what the name of this is. Come on. Hold on one second. Boom. All right. It's called Secret Garden Behind the Scenes. And it's by The Pilot. If you guys want to check out the recording of what's going on there. It overall, just a beautiful, beautiful piece. And like I said, another way that we bring nature into art. Because this whole thing just seems like a piece of music, a piece of song, a piece that works so well within all of, you know, the feeling of the words and the feeling of the song. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. What do you think, Mocha?
Oh, I think this is really beautiful. It's wonderfully constructed. I love the form of it, actually, how the lines are placed. It actually helped a lot with how I read it. I think it was really graceful to her descriptions, sort of wistful in its feeling as you read it. You know, the sunset rests its weary head down, and an old grove of old pine bed sounds almost like classic verse a little bit, just a little bit, enough that it makes you feel nostalgic as you read it, but also gives you this sort of wistful yet comforted feeling of it being something of a fantasy or a daydream, something ethereal almost. And the ending, especially to the silhouette and flowers talk harmonizing tonight, unsung song, a gently performed sound in D minor turn, he said it was. It definitely gives me this sort of feeling of, I don't know how often people go outside anymore at night, but especially if you're sort of rural area where there's not a lot of sort of noise around at night, you go outside and there's really is all the different sounds. There's crickets over here in Trinidad, there's frogs, or as we call them, you know, and they make their very unique sort of chirping sound, adding to it. Sometimes you have cicadas, you know, sometimes you have the sound of the wind and the rustling of the trees, and in just pure silence, all of those sounds come together in this wonderful sort of cacophony of night music that occurs naturally. And it sort of reminded me of that silence in nature is quite loud sometimes, but it's always very well composed. And I think that's really the...
No, you're right, because I know we've talked on the phone at night, and I've heard the frogs and the crickets in the background, and they are loud. They are very loud. So, yeah, I understand that completely. And I walk home every night from work. So I am going by a little swamp area, plus I'm also going by my my meadow. So I often hear those frogs and those crickets. And, you know, ultimately, as you walk by them night after night and you just become one with them, they become part of what you are. And if you don't hear them, it's like you're missing something. So, yeah, I think that is just a gorgeous point right there and a beautiful point. So what do you think the best way to finish the show would be?
Well, I don't know. You seem to have something in mind.
I think I have something in mind from Lawrence 67.
Save the best for last, huh?
So sit back and let's get a little advice from dear Gabby. Oh my God. This is called Dear Gabby by Lawrence 67. Hello there. You are on air with the number one advice guru, Dr. Gabby, who has a PhD in gabbing. Who is this and what is your question?
Hey, Dr. Gabby. My name is Alfie DeCat, and I need some advice of your wise advice. I met this fine pussy. Cat goes by the name of Princess, and I dare say that I was a smitten kitten. And we are going out tonight, gonna sing on some fence posts and spray my scent here and there. Now, my question, I would like to get her in the mood, if you know what I mean. I'm thinking a little wine, maybe. What do you think? Ain't nothing wrong with the vine. A little vine to get her behind.
Let me tell you, Mrs. Gabby, this is a real bitch, and she makes me whine all the time before she gives me the okie dokie, do some pokey.
Yes, my advice is to whine your ass off, to get cooty booty, whine, whine, whine.
Huh?
And bump.
Jay, what was that accent you were doing for Dr. Gabby?
I was going for something like a German accent. You know, we've had many doctors in, say, America that have this accent.
So a little German, I don't know.
Is that German or Russian? Like, I'm not sure where we're going with that one, but.
I was having fun with it. I thought I'd just throw it in there.
he's like a vampire doctor for a second. It's like if Dracula did his PhD in medicine.
He's a hematologist.
This was hilarious, as per usual, on Lawrence's part. I love that he keeps coming up with these new characters for Alfie and Nigel to interact with. And I didn't know that Alfie and Prince were dating. I'm sorry. They're a couple. I thought Princess was great.
Scandal.
Oh, my God. What is Nigel going to do when he finds out?
Uh-oh. We're going to have oh, my gosh. They should do a Maury Povich thing.
Oh, God. Don't give Lawrence any ideas. Actually, give Lawrence all the ideas. I take it back. Give Lawrence all the ideas. That would be hilarious.
The DNA test says, you're both the daddies now. Oh, my God.
I love that the author's note says, hey, Alfie, that has nothing to do with Nate. The promo read. Alfie goes, can't blame L60. Oh, wait, I just remembered he can't read either.
Oh, my gosh. He does such a fun job on all these. Oh, God.
Yeah, fourth wall king here, Lawrence.
Again and again and again. There is no fourth wall with Lawrence.
Absolutely not.
Well, we've got a few minutes left here, or 1 minute left, less than 60 seconds. So let me thank Deb and AP for calling up and joining us. Becky and Steve, I saw you both on the board. Great to have you guys. And everybody who wrote for us, thank you guys so much. We greatly appreciate all you guys that come out, support, help us. We love you all. And Mocha, thank you for a wonderful time again. Just appreciate you. Love you to death.
Thank you.
And, we have such a great time.
Thank you for being here, Jay, and always holding it down. So to AP and Deb for calling in, just like Jay said, and Becky and Stephen out on the board and everyone who's for us, we appreciate it every week. And I already decided what the topic is for next week, so we'll put that up immediately after the show as soon as we get a chance. And I hope we join you, I hope you join us next week.
Absolutely. Well, with that, I'm going to put a little scientific up, and we'll call it a show. So here we go.